Tony Katz Show, everybody. Good to be with all of you. Tony, that is the number. 888-955-8669. 955-8669. Or 888-955-TONY. You can do both. You can do both. I mean, they'll both get you to the same spot. It's just that fantastic. Look at that happening on your screen right now. Morphing like magic, that was. Good to be with all of you online at TonyKatz.com. And, of course, Talk Stream Live is where it's at. For those asking, thank you. Feeling much better, whatever the stomach flu was. It is gone. It has passed me. It could have been a stomach bug, could have been food poisoning. Either way, not attractive in the slightest. I wish it upon no one. I might wish it upon some. I'd like to say that I'm a better man than that. But sometimes, you know the people, they might deserve just that. 888-955-8669. Also, you can find us on Twitter, twitter.com/TonyKatz, TonyKatz. A whole lot to get to, but I got to start with Krugman, Paul Krugman out of the New York Times. And I try my best, ladies and gentlemen, only to speak about actual economists. But this needs to be taken on head on. Because you have to understand the two-part scenario of what's happening in the world of Paul Krugman, the so-called economist, the so-called Nobel Prize winner. Remember when the Nobel Prize meant something? Yeah, this was before Paul Krugman won it. He has an article that he put out on the 18th called The Twinkie Manifesto. The Twinkie, it turns out, was introduced way back in 1930. In our memories, however, the iconic snack will forever be identified with the 1950s, when Hostess popularized the brand by sponsoring the Howdy Doody show. And the demise of Hostess has unleashed a wave of baby boomer nostalgia for a seemingly more innocent time. Needless to say, it wasn't really innocent. But the 50s, the Twinkie era, do offer lessons that remain relevant in the 21st century. Above all, the success of the post-war American economy demonstrates that, contrary to today's conservative orthodoxy, you can have prosperity without demeaning workers and coddling the rich. And at that moment, you have to stop and take a breath and possibly a drink of something stronger than the water that I have right next to me. Because you learn very quickly what Krugman is about. And what Krugman is not about is about economics. What Krugman is about, well, we're going to get into that a little bit later in the program. But first, let's take a look at his concept of economics. His discussion here of Twinkie is to enable himself, he uses it as a device, there's a reason for that, to get himself into a conversation about the 1950s and tax rates of the 1950s, where the marginal top tax bracket had a marginal rate of 91%. And he refers to the fact that taxes on corporate profits were twice as large relative to national income as in recent years. The best estimate suggests that at circa 1960, the top 0.01% of Americans paid an effective federal tax rate of more than 70%, twice what they pay today. He talks about the fact that a third of American workers were union members in 1955. The biggest companies, management and labor, bargained as equals. So much so that it was common to talk about corporations serving an array of, quote, stakeholders, unquote, rather than merely serving the stockholders. 1955, he talks about Fortune magazine publishing an essay about how the top executives live, which emphasized how modest their lifestyles had become compared with days of yore. The vast mansions and armies of servants and huge yachts of the 20s were gone by the 50s, and they lived in smallish suburban houses, relied on part-time help, and skippered their own relatively small boat. As he then continues, he talks about Fortune's impressions. The data confirms that between the 20s and the 50s, real incomes for the richest Americans fell sharply. Not, as he says here, compared with the middle class, but in absolute terms. That they absolutely lost value, not just in terms of percentage, but in terms of actual dollars. And then, of course, today, he says, the mansions, armies of servants, and yachts are back bigger than ever, and any hint of policy that might crimp plutocrat style is met with cries of socialism. And he actually goes into, some people thought so at the time when he says, surely then the far less plutocrat-friendly environment of the 1950s must have been an economic disaster. Paul Ryan, he continues, and many other modern conservatives are devotees of Ayn Rand. Well, the collapsing, moocher-infested nation she portrayed in Atlas Shrugged, published in 1957, was basically Dwight Eisenhower's America. Strange to say, however, that oppressed executives Fortune portrayed in 1955 didn't go galt and deprive the nation of their talents. High tax, strong union decades after World War II were in fact marked by spectacular, widely shared economic growth. Nothing before or since has matched the doubling of the median family income between 1947 and 1973, which he says brings us back to the nostalgia thing. So here he has created, for you, for me, for we, the fantasy that the Twinkie is a reminder that the wicked Republican, conservative, non-Obama lover wants to go back to the 50s. How do I know that he has this in his headspace? Because where's the line? Oh, the line is in here, ladies and gentlemen. The line is in here. I got to get it. I have to absolutely get it right. There are, let's face it, he says, some people in our political life who pine for the days when minorities and women knew their place. Gays stayed firmly in the closet, and congressmen asked, are you now or have you ever been? This is an economist. So we have to understand what he's talking about. Forgive me for having to go through all that, for having to explain all that, for having to list all that, but you had to have the context of the article in order to understand where it is I'm going next. So let's talk about it in its two places. First of all, let's talk the economics. I reached out to Rod Hewlett, a dear friend of the show. We haven't had him on for a while. That is my fault and my fault alone. And Rod Hewlett is the dean of the College of Business at Bellevue University. He led the global product development strategy team efforts for management, business, and legal education programs at Laureate Education. He was the executive vice president and chief academic officer at Walsh College. He served in the armed forces, retiring from the U.S. Army National Guard in 2002 with the rank of lieutenant colonel. Earned his doctorate and master's of arts degrees in economics from Middle Tennessee State, bachelor's of science degree in business from Cameron, certified financial manager, certified treasury professional, a member of the American Economics Association, financial planning. Okay, I can go on and on and on. I just want to give you an idea of who the guy is. And I asked him, this thing from Krugman, what's your take? And he said to me two very important things. He said, no, I don't agree with Krugman. The productive capacity of the world was destroyed during World War II, and the U.S. was the dominant industrial player. Productivity, he states, and wages soared, and the social state did not take nearly the bite. So while everybody else was getting ravaged by the war, the United States, based on basically its place in the world, its physical geography, was less affected, therefore had the opportunity to ramp up massively. That ability to engage wealth engaged an ability to move wealth because you needed people in order to match the productivity need. That's what the employee is. The employee is never guaranteed an income. The employee is the byproduct of the growth of an industry, which is done so by the necessity created by the customer. The customer wants to buy. The company has to grow to make sure it can meet the demands of the customer. The employee is what helps the company meet those demands, and therefore a wage is given for the productivity that is output. Everybody with me so far? Is everybody with the basic idea and concept that so much of the growth that Krugman talks about between 47 and 73 has to do with not only our physical place, but has to do with what happened in the world and a system that allowed for the growth, and the social state was not as large as it is today, preventing that growth? He also adds something else, and he has a graph that goes with it. I'll try. I can't get up right now, but I can try. If you take a look at federal, state, and local government current receipts and expenditures as a percentage of GDP, if you take a look at the receipts right now at these tax rates are still higher than 1955. So of what value is a 91% tax rate if at the tax rates I currently have in the environmental holy hell I currently live in, and in the world of erroneous regulations that I suffer through, that you suffer through, that we suffer through? Why would I move to a 91% tax rate when right now, through all of it, I'm still doing better than 1955? Paul Krugman has a lot to answer for. We're going to dig in much more to why he wrote this column. Stay with us, much more ahead. This is the Tony Katz Show. We will be right back. The Tony Katz Show. Small little cough right there. 888-955-TONY. That is the number. 888-955-8669. Online at TonyKatz.com and TalkStream Live. TalkStreamLive.com, discussing the surreal article called The Twinkie Manifesto. And I think it just absolutely appropriate that a man like Paul Krugman should have a manifesto. At least it's kind of revealing to who he is, what he's all about. The Twinkie Manifesto, which has nothing to do with economics, couldn't have less to do with economics if he wanted it to. There's absolutely, positively nothing in there about economic theory of value. And I have economists who tell me, who I trust, Krugman is flat out wrong. And certainly I'd love to have the conversation. Someone put in the chat room, Katz Krugman steel cage match. Listen, I'm not an economist. I just know right and wrong. You know, he's wrong. But you have to dig into what is happening here. Take a look at what he's talking about in his conversation about so-called economic theory. He talks about how the Twinkie is identified with the Howdy Doody show. First of all, we have to accept as given that that's not how the Twinkie is identified by anybody who is under the age of 50. I'm sorry, under the age of 60? Is my mother listening? I'm not saying my mother's old. I'm not saying that. Settle. Under the age of, what, 60? 55? So I'm 40. There is absolutely nothing, absolutely nothing about the Twinkie that says to me, oh, Howdy Doody show. Zero. Understand that he made that up. He used that as nothing but a tool to get to the place that he wanted to be at. It's a device. The idea that it's a seemingly more innocent time. Well, it was a time when kids had to jump under their desks for fear of a nuclear bomb dropping on their school. By the way, if you tried to do that now, if you tried to have some kind of bomb drill now, you would be told you're a child abuser. However, if you tell kids that they don't reduce their carbon footprint, you'll blow them up, then you're a good steward of the land. It's just a question of how you play the game. That's all. He gets into the conversation about, here it is. Today, of course, the mansions, armies, and servants and yachts are back bigger than ever, and any hint of policies that might crimp plutocrat styles met with cries of socialism. Indeed, the whole Romney campaign was based on the premise that President Obama's threat to modestly raise taxes on top incomes plus his temerity in suggesting that some bankers had behaved badly were crippling the economy. What's Romney have to do with Obama have to do with Twinkie and economics? Why in the world the mention of Ayn Rand? Why in the world this mention of there are some in our political life who pine for the days when minorities and women knew their place, gays stayed firmly in the closet, and congressmen asked, are you now or have you ever been? And he actually has the gall to say we are morally a much better nation than we ever were. Oh, and the food has improved a lot too. There are those of us who would argue that things like Obamacare are certainly not moral. But one has to ask, what is the focus of this article? Why is it out here? What is Krugman trying to tell us? Krugman is using his position as an economist and laughably as a Nobel Prize winner. Remember, Arafat was a Nobel Prize winner, so you take it for what you will. Obama was a Nobel Peace Prize winner. Ask the people of Syria if they think that's funny. Ask the people of Libya if they think that's funny. Ask the people of Egypt if they think that's funny. Ask the people of Israel if they think that's funny. I'll wait. And he's using these positions to push forth his class warfare meme. Because that's what this is. This is a continued attack and assault in the class warfare meme. But why? The election's over. This is a prime example about how it's not about elections. It's about the culture. Krugman is legacy shopping. That's what it looks like to me. Krugman is trying to find his place amongst Keynes, John Maynard Keynes, the guy who actually believed you could spend your way into prosperity. You got to prime that pump. He's legacy shopping. He's looking for his place. Where does he fit? Where will they say his name with a breathless tone? Krugman. You know, like a small Japanese girl giggling in some anime. Like that. He's looking for his place amongst Keynes as a man of value and import and importance. That's where he wants to be. But we understand how important Keynes is. We understand how much of a liar Keynes is. We understand that it was a valueless system, a valueless philosophy. Somebody sent me something just the other day. I think it was Josh. Where is it, Josh? There we go. From Keynes. Keynes's conclusion. Thus, we might aim and practice, there being nothing in this which is unattainable, at an increase in capital until it ceases to be scarce so that the functionless investor will no longer receive a bonus. That's Keynes. The functionless investor. The person who puts up the cash, puts up the risk, is functionless because capital should not have something called scarcity. That's another day. Krugman is using this article in his position with the New York Times to curry love. You know, it used to be curry favor. He's trying to curry love with contemporaries in order to build his legacy because legacies matter. Because within legacies, you get to create myths. And when you hear certain names, you think of certain things.
That's why it's so important as to who writes the history books, because they're the ones who get to tell the story. If you look at a history book now, the story of America is far different than the actual story of America. The story of the revolution, the story of slavery. I don't think you should write a story so it removes things. I think you should write a story so it includes the right things, the true things, the things that happened, not the message you want to get across. That revisionist history is the most evil concept in the world. And when you go through history, the most evil men and women in history engage it. It has to be fought. Krugman is using the Twinkie to push forth an idea that the 50s were this evil, horrific, horrible time where gays were oppressed and women were told to be in the closet, and the people who are nostalgic for the 50s or for the Twinkie want that still to happen. How many gay men like Twinkies? I mean, things I thought I'd never say on this show. How many gay men like Twinkies? How many lesbians like Twinkies? Isn't it possible to like a snack food and not want to engage a life of living in the closet? What are you talking about, Paul Krugman? The answer is you're not talking about anything. As a matter of fact, you don't even have sound fiscal policy. What you are doing, what he is doing to you, what he is trying to do to America, is curry favor amongst his liberal left to increase the loftiness of his name so it becomes beyond reproach. So the harebrained, knuckleheaded, nonsense, bullcrap concepts and thoughts and ideals that he has come up with in the years and the years and the years and the years of his existence, they are not allowed to be touched because, after all, Krugman. Legacy shopping. Legacy matters, and this is dangerous. And our job is to call out the liars. Paul Krugman is a liar. Paul Krugman doesn't understand his own writing. And Paul Krugman doesn't understand economics. It's a hard thing to say. I mean, the guy is an economist. But if your push to the 91% tax bracket, when we're better off now with receipts, money going in, but your push is based on the Twinkie reminding people of Howdy Doody, you can't really be thought of as a serious man. More ahead. Stay with us. This is the Tony Katz Show. We'll be right back. The Tony Katz Show, 888-955-TONY. That is the number, 888-955-8669. Brought to you by the Computer Hero, thecomputerhero.com. You don't need the malware. You don't need the spyware. You don't need all the absolute nonsense that's going on in your computer. We know you don't. You just don't need it anymore. Like a Paul Krugman economics lesson, you know it's valueless. You know it's just killing you. You know that if you listen to it, if you actually live with that, you'll end up in a far worse place. Don't let it happen to you. Contact the Computer Hero, thecomputerhero.com, thecomputerhero.com. They're going to get rid of those poorly installed programs. They're going to clean up your machine. They're never going to step foot in your house. It's all by remote assistance. You can wear your pajamas or whatever it is you wear. I'm not judging. I'm not. You may think, I'm not. I do not judge these. I judge many things. Not this. TheComputerHero.com, TheComputerHero.com. Mention my name, mention Tony Katz, mention Tony Katz Show. Get 20% off. Do it now. Do it for your mental health. And do it for your pocketbook, TheComputerHero.com. Two stories.
two stories, not one but two, not one but two, from the Quick Six. The best of the blogosphere, all in one spot, the Quick Six at allpatriotsmedia.com. President Obama, this from the Gateway Pundit, he is in Burma, although he called it Myanmar. And, well, he also referred to the United States as a Pacific nation. And I'm telling you, I'm 40 and I've never heard that before. Why? What is his absolute desire to make us like everybody else? When it's a far better conclusion, if we actually follow the Constitution, for everybody else to be like us. Or at least try to be free. I mean, they don't have to be like us, you know, in food or in look or in dress. And the culture, they certainly each nation has its own flavor. I like it. But certainly in the ideas of freedom, free society, free people, economic freedom. Which, remember when we used to have economic freedom? Those were good times, ladies and gentlemen. This is President Obama, who once again proves that there is not a single person surrounding him who is willing to disagree with him publicly. He is trying to pronounce the name. Now, remember, I don't have all of the help that President Obama has. And when I talk about a woman who has fought for democracy, I pronounce it as Aung San Suu Kyi. That is her name. I don't believe I am pronouncing it incorrectly. But President Obama has staffers. President Obama has staffers who have staffers. Then there are interns who staff the staffers who staff the staffers. There are multiple lines. It's like a piece of string art, ladies and gentlemen. It just flies out to another nail on the damn piece of plywood everywhere you go. It's just going everywhere. This is him. This is the President of the United States. This is it.
To be the first president to welcome Dow Aung San Suu Kyi to the White House, I'm proud to be the first American president to visit this spectacular country, and I am very pleased that one of my first stops is to visit with an icon of democracy who's inspired so many people, not just in this country, but all around the world. Today marks the next step in a new chapter between the United States and Burma. Last year, in response to early flickers of reform, I asked Secretary Clinton to visit this country and explore with Aung San Suu Kyi and the government whether the United States could empower reform efforts and begin a new relationship between our peoples. In the years since, we've seen some very encouraging progress, including Dow Aung San Suu Kyi's release and election to parliament, the release of political prisoners, the lifting of restrictions on the press, and new laws to expand labor rights and eliminate the use of child soldiers. Our goal is to sustain the momentum for democratization. That includes building credible government institutions, establishing rule of law, ending ethnic conflicts, and ensuring that the people of this country have access to greater education, health care, and economic opportunity.
I bring it up because it's important to know that the smartest guy in the room can't pronounce a name when he is surrounded by people whose total job is to tell him how to pronounce the name. The problem is not getting something incorrect. The problem is being surrounded by people who can correct you and don't. Nobody had a little bit of transliteration right there. Nobody had it set up for him ready to go. Not a person. Not one person amongst his staff. That is stunning to me. It's stunning to me. Not that he got something wrong. My gosh, people get things wrong. It's that with all his staff, no one makes sure he has it right. That's the part that blows my mind. When you're in a position and your job is to make the final decision, you really do want the best people around you giving you the advice so you can make the proper decision. You don't know if it's right until it happens. but you do everything you can to make sure you've got everything together. I don't believe that happens in his case. I don't. And it is also an interesting note, because when people talk about the fairness of the media, and you see this constant mispronunciation of this world leader. I'm the guy who lived through nuclear. Remember, George Bush was a dummy because of nuclear. Not nuclear, nuclear. So it goes to a bigger conversation of why can't we talk about X when it's so easy to talk about Y? And this is, and by the way, this isn't the first time. Corpsman. So let's take it out of a language that is not his own, and let's just go to the idea of corpsman. As the chat room is reminding me at TonyKatz.com, let's go to the idea of 57 states. This isn't the first time. I am not saying that people don't make mistakes. Dan Quayle, as the chat room again is reminding me, and beautifully so, Dan Quayle never lived down potato with an E. It's over. Dan Quayle's the dumbest man who ever lived because of tomato, a potato with an E. 57 states, corpsman, and now this. Come on. What do we got here? Why can't we just call it as it is? I question whether or not the president gets good advice. I question whether or not anybody ever questions the president. I wonder if anybody will have corrected him when he got done. Did someone say to him, by the way, sir, it's San. It's San. You referred to her as Aung Yan Suu Kyi. It's Aung San Suu Kyi. Sir, you got the cheap part right. Just want you to know in case you do anything else. Not Yan, San. Thank you. Nobody. Nobody has that job in the Obama administration. Oh, I only assume because you get fired if you do that. You get fired if you correct the guy. Here's one more bit of where's the media playing its game. This is MSNBC investigating. I'm sorry, not investigating. Interviewing Michael Oren, who is the Israeli ambassador to the United States. Michael Oren, who was involved at UC Irvine, something called the Irvine 11, these Muslim students who protested him speaking there and prevented him from speaking because they don't believe in freedom of speech down there, obviously. I mean, obviously, they may be upset with Israel. I don't say no to that, but they obviously don't believe in the freedom of speech. They don't want to engage a conversation. They just want to shut a man down, and they think that's a value. That's the least valuable thing you can do. That is totalitarianism. That is oppressive. That is just not the American way. We let people speak. I built a whole radio career about letting the other guy talk. If you were listening to Saturday's program on FM News Talk 97.1, I was talking about unions. I had two callers, both members of unions, both conservatives who disagreed with me. Got to get it all out. Other shows, they would have been cut off in 4 seconds. They probably wouldn't even put on the air. My goodness, let them speak. But this is MSNBC interviewing Michael Oren. Now, it's 4 minutes, so I'm not going to play the whole thing. I'm going to play part of it, though.
The crisis between Israel and Hamas is...
Because you got to hear her questions and how she phrases these questions.
Just hours ago shot down a Tel Aviv-bound missile. Earlier, scores of Israeli bombs hit the center of Gaza. Hamas government buildings were targeted in that attack. Tens of thousands of Israeli troops are massing near the country's border with Gaza. The Israeli cabinet Friday authorized the call-up of as many as 75,000 reservists. Joining me now is Israel's ambassador to the United States, Michael Oren. Mr. Ambassador, thank you for joining me.
Good afternoon, Mara.
What would be the trigger for a ground operation? What's the red line here?
Well, the red line simply is as Hamas continues to escalate.
So, all right.
We now have millions of
First question,
of Israelis
at what moment does Israel say, okay, we're going in? We're going in and we're going to solve
no
a problem here.
In the world,
that's a question.
No government would
I don't find too much fault with that question.
Population is sitting in bomb shelters all night, or never going more than 15 seconds run from the nearest bomb shelter, because that's all you have. That's the time you have when the alarm gets off before the rocket actually smashes into your neighborhood. So you have the equivalent of what would be about 170 million Americans under bomb shelters. If Hamas continues to escalate, we will take the necessary and legitimate measures to defend our citizens.
And that the being living under the threat of rocket attack is certainly a psychological trauma. But what would you say to those who argue that the rockets are essentially very ineffective, they rarely do damage, and that the response from the Israelis is disproportional to the threat that they're under?
Well, if you didn't hear that, I replay it right here, right now.
The rockets are essentially very ineffective. They rarely...
Sorry.
Being living under the threat of rocket attack is certainly a psychological trauma. But what would you say to those who argue that the rockets are essentially very ineffective, they rarely do damage, and that the response from the Israelis is disproportional to the threat that they're under?
Excuse me, Mr. Ambassador. The rockets coming from Hamas and from the Palestinians, they don't really do anything to you. So why are you guys such big bullies? That was a question posed by a so-called anchor. Hey, Israel, why are you being such bastard thugs? I mean, yeah, they're sending in rockets. It might be a little scary, but why are you such wimps, you pansies? Now, Oren gives a fantastic answer, by the way.
Three Israeli people who were killed by one of those rockets, the 150 Israelis who have been wounded physically and psychologically by this. These rockets paralyze an entire country. There is no school. People cannot go out of their houses, out of their bomb shelters. Again, that's an utterly intolerable situation for any country. Imagine if one rocket had fallen in the United States and not now, since the year 2009, our last operation, we've had something in the vicinity of 8,000 rockets fall on the state of Israel. That's more than twice all of the German rockets that fell on London during World War II. And you saw how the British and the Americans reacted to that.
Now, to understand fully that answer, do you realize the amount of time it takes for those of us with a free and thinking mind to combat the lunacy of the progressive left and the culturally indifferent who want to ask the question of, listen, so you're getting some bombs. Why do you have to fight back? Why do you have to be such a bully? You're just getting a couple of bombs. Listen to the length and the breadth and the width of that answer, the experience of that answer, the richness of that answer, the historical context of that answer, the statistics of that answer. All of that, instead of saying, hey, are you out of your mind? They're bombing us and we should take it. Screw you. I think that in the end result, a little bit of my answer needs to get mixed in with a little bit of Ambassador Oren's answer. And then we can start actually winning some of that culture battle. Because right now the culture is telling everybody Israel's just a big bully for defending itself. More ahead. Stay with us. This is the Tony Katz Show. We will be right back. The Tony Katz Show, everybody. 888-955-TONY. That is the number. 888-955-8669. Online at TonyKatz.com and TalkStream Live. TalkStreamLive.com. DNC Chair Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Ain't she lovely? Ain't she just a treat? Democratic National Committee Chair Debbie Wasserman Schultz said the Republican Party got, quote, whiter and more male, unquote, while the Democratic caucus is majority, minority, and female. Huh. Take a good look when the House convenes after this next Congress is sworn in at what our side of the aisle looks like versus what the Republican side looks like. I mean, they got whiter and more male, and we now have a majority, minority, and female Democratic caucus, first time in history, Debbie Wasserman Schultz said, at a discussion hosted at by Emily's List, a group known for supporting pro-abortion female candidates. She said, when women run for office, Democrats win.
We have to double down in 2014. We've got to make sure we recruit more women for office, because it's not just a slogan that when women run, women win. They do, and when women run, Democrats win. The new Congress will consist of 20 women senators and 81 congresswomen. This is no longer an all-male state legislature anywhere in the country. 40% of the U.S. population now is at least one woman senator. So for Debbie Wasserman Schultz, what you believe isn't important. What you value isn't important. Your skin color and your vagina are the only two things that matter. If you have the right skin color, or if you have a vagina, and maybe you have both, victory. This confounds people of the free and thinking mind, because, well, what if they have a vagina? And what if they have a different skin color than me, but their ideas are still awful? What if they have a vagina and they have a darker skin color than I do, but they believe in taxing 100%? What if they believe in completely dismantling the army and getting rid of the military altogether? What if they believe in a complete and total reversal of the Second Amendment? What if they believe in a complete and total reversal of the Fourth Amendment? What if they have a vagina? Wait a second. Go with me on this thesis, everybody. What if they have a vagina? They have darker skin color than I do. By the way, for those of you who didn't know, Fourth Amendment search and seizure. Seriously, sometimes you don't have it memorized. I know Nancy Pelosi got it wrong. But listen, 30 years in Congress, maybe you should have it right by then. Keep it on your phone. Keep it on your phone. Always reference back to it. Don't be afraid to reference back to it right there. Make sure that you're set. This is only a what if. This is a Jill Scott just saying conversation. What if, and maybe you've got one, 888-955-TONY, 888-955-8669. What if you have a vagina, you have darker skin color than I do, but you also want to repeal the 21st Amendment? The 21st Amendment is the amendment that repealed the 18th, which did not allow liquor to be sold, distributed in the United States. So what if that's your plan? What if your plan is to reenact the 18th Amendment? Should I still vote for you? The idea, and by the way, can we talk about the party that has brought in the color and the changes? I mean, I'm not a member of the Republican Party, but you can't deny it, can you? You can't deny Susana Martinez and Ted Cruz and Mia Love. Oh, the racists in Utah didn't vote for Mia Love. That's right. That's right. Oh, and the racists in Florida voted for a white man as opposed to voting for Alan West. Huh, Debbie? Races, I go, you know what? Listen, I guess the Republicans wanted to have the same kind of thesis that you did, but, you know, the racists in those states, the racist Democrats in those states, wouldn't vote for the people that were the right color. They wouldn't do it. They wouldn't vote for the people who were the right color, because obviously, according to your thesis, it's all about color. Color and vagina, vagina and color. That's all it is. That's all we've got. There is nothing else. There is nothing else of value. To which case, Mia Love and Alan West should obviously be members of the United States House of Representatives. But they're not. Why? Racism. I want Debbie and I want Al Sharpton out there getting it done. I want them to handle the situation. I want some marches. I want to talk about the racists. Someone in the chat room just put in, what a weird show. Sorry, these are the subjects. This is it. What kind of... What, she tells us, she wants us to believe, again, moving forward on the race warfare commentary. Why? It's not about elections, it's about culture. Reinforce, reinforce, reinforce the lie. A lie that has worked for them. A lie that has worked for them in this past election cycle, except in the House. They still didn't win the House. And think of two seats that they just did away with for minorities. In Utah, you could have had a skin color darker than mine and a vagina. You didn't vote for it, Utah. Why? Racists. Democrats are racists in Utah. This is obvious. It's as clear as day. How else can it be explained? What are Debbie Wasserman Schultz's words? We have to make sure we recruit more women for office. That's what she said. So does she want women for office or does she want Democrats for office? What is it that she wants? When she says, I mean, they got whiter and more male and we now have a majority minority and female Democratic caucus. Well, what do they all believe? Are you after the best candidate or are you after the best vagina and skin color? Because really, that's what you're boiling it down to. Mia Love wasn't good enough, right? And I don't reduce her to those things. Debbie Wasserman Schultz does. So let's not have anybody writing me emails that somehow I'm reducing Mia Love to this. Was Alan West not black enough, Congressman Schultz? Really? You might want to ask him. He might have a different idea. This desire, this want, this need about color and race, race and color, color and race. Everything is about these things. This is nothing more than moving the cultural meme. This is not, it's not even meant in any way, shape, or form to be logical. The last thing in the world they want is logic. It is meant to continue down a path where those who actually believe the lies, especially in the group of people who voted in the majority for Obama, the 30 and under crowd, 5.8 million more votes than Romney. Romney in the 30 and over, 1.8 million more votes. That 3 million vote spread, ladies and gentlemen, that's what we're talking about. The states of Florida and Virginia and Ohio and Colorado, 400,000 votes. The difference in this election in terms of creating a swing in the Electoral College, that's what we're talking about. Their job is to increase that. They do that by engaging the same warfare that has worked. It works. So obviously, by the same mathematics, not voting for Mia Love is racism from Democrats. It's obvious. Because it can't be about the facts. It can't be that someone didn't like her policies. That's false. It has to be false. By their logic. The only reason a black woman doesn't get elected is because of racism. The only reason a black woman is told, is questioned about her job is because of racism and sexism, not because she may have altered or lied about talking points regarding what happened in Benghazi and the death of four Americans, including the ambassador. Right? If we're not willing to fight in the way that they fight, if we're not willing to engage the way they engage, and if we're not willing to show the insanity by use of their own words, then let's pack it up. Let's go home, America. And by the way, home is the grave. I mean, where else are you going to go? Where else do you think you can go? That'd be my question. Where else do you think you can go? All right, you ready? I'm ready. Questions and answers. Let's do this thing.
I went to church last Sunday. So I could sing and pray for something quite unusual that happened on that day. My church, it started right on time, just like it does without a doubt. And everything was all just fine, except when it came time to let us out. You know, the preacher, he kept preaching. He told us, I have one more thing to say, children, before you think of leaving.
So I might just let this play.
Think about the judgment day. Yeah. Everyone got nervous.
Lyle, love it.
Was a hunger too.
Song called
everyone
Church
was
off the album Joshua Judges Ruth.
The next thing he would do, and the preacher, he kept preaching. He said, now I'll remind you, if I may, you all better pay attention.
You've got questions, we've got answers. 888-955-TONY. That is the number, 888-955-8669. Put them in the chat room at TonyKatz.com. T-O-N-Y-K-A-T-Z, TonyKatz.com. Twitter.com/TonyKatz. Or, of course, Facebook.com/TonyKatz Radio Show. I'm ready. Let the games begin. Yes, yes, yes. The ambassador in Benghazi was gay. Tony, why hasn't GLAAD gotten involved in calling for an investigation? Because as we have seen, and I think you just saw in our chat room, Arizona 1776, women were not considered women unless they were lib feminists since Gloria Steinem and now. And that's absolutely how they view the world. Women aren't women unless they're liberal, according to the Democrat, according to the media. If they're conservative women, they're somehow evil. At Fordham University, Ann Coulter was not allowed to speak there, but they had a panel, and one of the people on the panel was a man who has been writing about how we should be a society that is okay with bestiality. Ann Coulter is the problem. Sex with your dog seems to be acceptable, according to Fordham. Why hasn't GLAAD jumped in this? I don't know. Maybe someone should ask. Perhaps someone should ask. Tony, why do libs hate white males so much? The answer is it's easy. The truth is that it's easy to hate white men. And white men won't kill you for hating them. Try and hate Muslim men who engage Sharia. Go on. Hate Sharia. Hate Muslims who engage Sharia. I'll wait. Those people will kill you. White men will say, we're sorry. Well, not this white man, but you know, them. You have no reason to hate me. I didn't do anything wrong. I have no original sin. I have no white guilt. There is nothing wrong with me because of my skin color. What is wrong with you? You think I should somehow walk around feeling bad about who I am and how I look? I can't do anything about this. What, are you crazy? What kind of society is that? Isn't that the society you don't want? Or is it about revenge? And it is the society you want. You tell me, man. Which one is it? Which one is it? Would you eat caffeinated Cracker Jack? I believe the correct question is, would I eat Cracker Jack? And the answer is, why would I when I can eat Garrett's popcorn out of Chicago? And if you've never had Garrett's popcorn, you know nothing. You know zero about the love, about the fascination that can be popcorn, about the thrill, about the exploration, about the hunt that is popcorn. Until you've eaten Garrett's popcorn, you know nothing. Not Cracker Jack's. Good gosh. What are you, clamoring for the 1950s like Krugman? That's a throwback to something earlier in the show. Catch the podcast at right there at TonyKatz.com. You can get it at iTunes. You get it at Blueberry. Oh, my gosh, it's everywhere. It's everywhere, that podcast. Subscribe now. You can get it at All Patriots Media as well, A-L-L, AllPatriotsMedia.com. Next question. What do you think about Anonymous siding with Hamas by attempting to hijack Israeli-affiliated sites? What Anonymous said was, was that they went after the sites in Israel because Israel said they were going to cut off the internet to the Gaza. And they said, nobody shuts down the internet on our watch. And my answer is, you're anonymous until you can put a face to your name. Shut up, you bastards. That's what I say. Here's my face. What am I? How in the world am I supposed to take a group of people who won't show their face seriously? That's like listening to somebody on Twitter who doesn't like me, who uses the name Cherry Tree. What I mean, or something like that. What in the world is the point? I have rules. Just because you can attack me because you're better with a computer than I am? What am I supposed to do about that? Congratulations to you for having a skill. Now I'm going to somehow live in fear of your terrorist activity? Not going to happen. That's crazy. You disagree with something, I say good. You want to vocalize your thoughts, I say good. You want to hack? I think that's crap. You want to go after people's sites? I think that's crap. I think that's garbage. But I don't live in fear. I just won't do it. Absolutely, positively won't do it. Just put your face to your name. Just man up. Woman up. I don't know who these people are. But their entire conversation was about shutting off the internet. It wasn't about siding with Hamas. I at least have to say that as far as I have read everything. Do they side with Hamas? I don't know. I have absolutely no idea. Tony, it's getting pretty cold here in New Jersey, and we have to turn up the heat. This makes my house dry. How do I prevent my hair from drying out? Wow. What? The questions for the Tony Katz Show, questions and answers, have gotten pretty involved. Pretty in-depth. I have no idea what to do about preventing your hair from drying out because I've got this and, never happens. Sorry. I don't know how the lesser people deal with that. Turkey or ham on Thanksgiving? Well, Sergeant Major, considering I've discussed the fact that I'm Jewish, maybe every other program for the past 2 years, I'm going to go with turkey. Count on it. I'm also making a brisket, but I might be making beef ribs. I haven't decided yet. I have to make the decision today, though. Will Israel use tactical nukes if attacked by Egypt? Are we talking about what they will do or what I'd like them to do? Which one? Which one is it? I think that everything is on the table. I think that everything should be. Do I think they should? The answer is yes. Because I believe you got to put an end to certain things. You just got to stop it. Because this is not stopping. This escalation is going to get larger and stronger. I don't want it. I don't. But I'm not worried about what Obama thinks about it. Israel should do what it feels it must. You know, I've heard people say that, you know, I'm an American, and I side with America. If you love another country, you should just go move there. Settle yourselves down, people. I want what's best. Mostly, I want to be left alone. That's first and foremost. I just want to be left alone. But I don't side with the people engaged in genocide in Darfur. I don't side with the crowds who set fire to everything in sight in France during the summer. And I have an opinion. I can do two things at the same time. I know I'm an American, and I know that I am better off if Israel survives and the Muslim Brotherhood doesn't. You can say that. It's an easy thing to say. There's nothing wrong with it. God, so many people want to make you think you're somehow a horrible person if you admit that. You're not. You're one of the few people thinking correctly and sanely. Just say it. Get the words out. Holy hell. I worked with a Jewish police officer that loved pulled pork sandwiches. Well, he had a gun, so I guess he could say anything he wanted to his rabbi.
Next question. Are deep fried Twinkies still on the menu for Thursday? May have been replaced by cannolis. I'm in a mood. I'm definitely in a mood. Next question. Can Israel survive without the U.S. help and at what cost? The answer is absolutely they can survive. The question of at what cost really is dependent upon how they choose to survive. So let's say they make the tactical decision that the only option left to them is quite literally obliterating the enemy. Depending on how you see the enemy is Hamas, the enemy is Hezbollah, the enemy is the Muslim Brotherhood. Maybe they leave Iran off the table just for now. But Iran watches what happens, of course. If they don't properly obliterate, then no, I don't believe they can survive. If the decision is made to engage the war, they cannot be people, as far as I see it, who engage in pinpoint warfare. I think I've said it a million times. I am disgusted by the concept, by the idea, by the thesis of pinpoint warfare. I don't think it does anybody any good whatsoever. I think it is an absolutely horrible thesis. I believe that counterinsurgency doesn't work whatsoever. I believe it is a fallacy. It's a myth. Those within the military could tell me I'm wrong. They can disagree with me all they want. I don't mind. I'm right here. But if they do engage and don't obliterate, I know it sounds awful. I get that. Don't get me wrong. If they don't obliterate, then there's absolutely positively no way for them to survive. That's my thesis. That's my thesis. Will the Palestinian Authority UN bid stifle the peace process? No. Shooting rockets at Israelis will, though. Killing Israeli civilians will. Arming Hezbollah and Hamas will. Sending more foreign aid to the Muslim Brotherhood that now runs Egypt will. The UN bid is just insanity. But remember, this is the UN. This isn't a thinking group of people. This is a group of despots that like to get together and spend America's money and get good bagels. I was in Beverly Hills today, and I'm actually on Rodeo. And I'm on Rodeo, and there is this group of 10 women, Muslim women. The hijab, I've seen it written as hijab, and I've seen it written as hijab, and I don't know why I always make that mistake. I don't want to make it. Let me get to it. Good Lord, computer, work, fix, nuts, total insanity. Okay, the hijab, thank you. Always want to get it right. Always want to get it right. And they're walking out of the Chanel store or one of them. And I said to myself, that is the most amazing thing. The word irony should have that picture next to it in the dictionary as a definition. A society, now I don't know if they're Sharia practicing people, I wouldn't know that, but I take it now for this conversation. A society that in their nations wouldn't allow women out of the house unless they were accompanied by a man, and there is certain Chanel store, there are no stores, so to speak, of this kind of wealth. And they are engaged in enjoying what America has created in terms of having these kinds of places on Rodeo. And far too many are actively engaged in the destruction of America, which will prevent them from being able to enjoy that store in the future. Blew my mind. Absolutely blew my mind. That what you see out there in the attacks on this kind of society, and you see it from within, You see the cultural attack. You see the 99%, 1% conversation. You see this culture war on wealth constantly. These people in the main, one of them specifically may have gone somewhere else. I'm going with the numbers. Vote for those people who believe in the destruction of what it is they were just shopping for. What am I supposed to say? I like fried turkey over baked turkey or oven-baked turkey. I have made a fried turkey before. A fried turkey is fantastic. I'm not doing it this year, though. I am not doing it this year. Not going to happen. Someone's asking about Hardcore Pawn. And Hardcore Pawn is a show on A&E or History Channel about a pawn shop in Detroit with this family that runs the pawn shop. The most dysfunctional group of people I have ever seen in my life. I don't remember the kids' names. The main guy is Leo or Les. Or his name's Les. That's it. Running a pawn shop in Detroit must be its own unique level of hell. Don't get me wrong, but it is a surreal experience to watch. And I sometimes don't believe that it's real. I'm pretty sure that it's set up. And the reason I say that, although maybe it's so, there's a show called Operation Repo. I don't know if you've ever seen it or not. It's on one of the, now. There's a bunch of them. There's Lizard Lake Towing and there's South Beach Towing, which is produced by Jennifer Lopez, which means someone said, hey, I've got this show. If you put your name on it, you can make a whole bunch of money. And she's like, sure. And Operation Repo, for a while, was the greatest show in the history of mankind, showing this family and their employees doing these repos. And these people are—they're ridiculous. They're huge. They're unbelievable in their size. And one woman is wearing a level of makeup to which could frighten small children on Halloween, and all of a sudden, you after like watching like four episodes or five episodes, to which I could not wait for the next episode. I was crack addicted. I forget what it was. I was like, wait a second, that's not real. Like something hit me, and then I did a little bit of research, and these are taking toe stories and acting them out. And I was distraught. I was distraught to learn that it wasn't real. And I take a look at a Hardcore Pawn, and I'm like, I'm not buying. The people who walk in and say, yeah, I want to pawn these earrings. I need $200. And they say, well, I can give you $40 for those. And the customer says, maybe you didn't hear me. I need $200, and you're going to give me $200. Where has that ever worked in the history of mankind? How is that even close to real? It's a mind scramble. So I don't believe it's true. I don't believe it's true at all. Next question, Tony. Why is there such an obsession over Duck Dynasty? All of a sudden, I'm the cable TV expert. How did I know? Duck Dynasty is the show about this family that has made millions with duck calls. You know, and they make you blow into them and make the noise, and then the ducks move, and then you can shoot them. I guess I don't know what you can do. I don't know. I didn't know there was such a fascination over them, other than they're funny. You know, they're just a bunch of funny guys, and they'll do anything, and they you know, no concept of the money, and they don't care about the money, but I guess they like having nice things. And you know, at one moment, the kids, they have, like, kids or aunt, you know, nieces or nephews, and they build them this big life-size kind of dollhouse, and one of the kids is like, there's no window in it, and so one of the uncles is like, I'll make you a window, and pulls out a chainsaw and just starts cutting through the plastic, and it's just a surreal experience, the whole thing. I don't know. I didn't know there was such a furor over it, such a... People, I didn't know people liked it so much. When did a team dressed like bumblebees join the NFL? You're talking a few weeks ago when the Steelers did one of their throwbacks uniforms there, Becca, in the chat room. I don't think anybody dressed like bumblebees, but I didn't see the Steelers game. They lost to the Ravens. It's the only thing I know. Tony, go to Detroit and you can prove them wrong. You can buy their stuff on the internet. I'm not saying that there isn't a pawn shop there. I'm not saying that this isn't real. And by the way, the interplay between the family, they're the worst people in the world. I have never understood the family or people who enjoy insulting each other and hurting each other. That is beyond my understanding. I have no idea why that would be a family dynamic that is valued. Pushing someone's buttons, irritating people, mocking them when they're down. What is the value of that? It is beyond me. So I when I watch, I find myself saying, God, I hate her. God, I hate him. God, is she a jerk. God, is he a putz. And I feel better about myself. Let's see. Next question. What did I miss? Can Israel end this war at a time of its choosing? I say yes. They've got the know-how and they've got the firepower. The question is the willpower. And the question is, are the people really ready to engage what comes next? To fire upon them means they're going to get fire returned. Are the people really ready? Are they ready to put their lives on hold, not for a day, not for a week, not for a month, but for a few years? Because they can take some serious hits. Are they ready to take on a world community that is going to shun them? I don't know. I look at the situation, an outsider looking in, maybe more attuned to the subject and more read on the subject than others. And I say to myself, well, if you keep this up, there will be no country in a decade. There will be no country. You will have this continued assault and attack from an international community. And if you continue to play the game of the international community, you will be a man without a country. You will be a nation without a nation. So how long can you afford to do it? I believe that you have to stand up and say, this is the moment. This is where it happens. This is for all the marbles. This is for the future. People with a little more information maybe think otherwise. I haven't spoken to BB today, so I don't know. Last question. Last question. Tony, what kind of drugs is Meghan McCain on? Oh, what did she say? What did she say? Is there a quote? Do we have a Meghan McCain quote to which I could peruse and then come to some kind of conclusion? If it's just in the basic of terms, she is not on any drugs. She's not on any drugs. What she's trying to get on is Christmas card lists. And to be liked, you might say near anything. You might say near anything. And that's why, you know, she talks about being a Republican, but I don't know what it means. Wait. This is the article from our dear friend Bale of Rights, Bailey over there. Comedy Central's indecision. Oh, wait, that's not it. It's indecision forever. That's right. Meghan McCain threatens to leave GOP. Oh, no. Oh, no, GOP. With even leaders inside their own party calling for change or reform, Republicans did not have a great week. Fortunately, a silver lining has just appeared over the storm clouds. Meghan McCain is threatened to leave their party. In an editorial for the Daily Beast, she writes, and if we don't move forward, adapt and become relevant again, the Republican Party isn't going to survive. It will just continue to alienate more moderate voters like myself. If I don't see some changes in the next 4 years, I'm going to consider registering as an independent in 2016. Well, I'd like to know from her exactly what she wants to see.
She wants to see the Republican Party be pro-gay marriage and pro-abortion. Well, you're not going to see those things. Your problem, Megan, is that you are in a fantastic position to engage the culture conversation, and you don't do it. You engage a conversation of likability for yourself, not for the party, not for an idea, not for a value, for you, so people will like you. It's clearly a better society that values life than doesn't. It clearly is. Okay, you don't want to have that conversation. We clearly should be a society that understands that words have meaning and marriage actually means something. Now, you could then get into the conversation on a far more libertarian side that government shouldn't be involved in marriage whatsoever, so therefore there shouldn't be a conversation about anything having to do with taxation or anything else. It should be a church function. But marriage is one man, one woman, and if two men do it, they should be able to live their lives, but it's something else. That's all. That's all I've ever said. But you don't do that either. Your value of compromise is we do what they want. Well, that's a good way to get on Chelsea Handler. But that's not necessarily a good way to run a nation. So, bye. Bye, 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 bye. And I don't know what's going on in the chat room now, but everyone just calm down. I don't get to everything. I don't get to everything. And by the way, I know Les Gold is his name from Hardcore Pawn. I know him and his family are Jewish. What does that mean to me? They're horrible people. If they were Catholics, they'd be horrible people. If they're Muslims, they'd be horrible people. They're not good to each other. What do I care if they're Jewish? What does that mean to me? Doesn't mean anything to me. They are. Okay. I'm not embarrassed by them. They're not representative of me. It's like saying Bernie Madoff, you know, I should be embarrassed. No. No. Bernie Madoff was a criminal. I'm glad the bastard's in jail. No skin off my nose. And by the way, for the Jews, that's funny. See that? Bam. Although I've got this. Look at that. Perfect. You're welcome. Don't forget Facebook and Twitter, Tony Katz. On Facebook, it is Tony Katz Radio Show. We are back again tomorrow. We do have a show Wednesday. We are off Thursday. I'm filling in for Dana Lash on Friday. Still don't know about a Friday afternoon show, though. I may allow myself a little bit of rest. Until then, tomorrow, everyone, much, much love. Take care.